This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. How are you today? It is a Friday. TGIF, we're glad you're here with us on Sports Daily, trying to get your weekend started early. We're glad to be here as a part of your Friday. Thanks for listening to us on KFH. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, all the different places you take us in, including the Odyssey app. Maybe you're listening to us as a podcast right now. We appreciate you anyway that you take in the show. Jacob Albrock here alongside Tommy Caster. Max is producing for us and taking your calls at 869-1240. Lots of good stuff to come today. We're going to take you out to spring training again with our Royals insider, Jalen Thompson. We're getting closer and closer to the start of the Major League Baseball season. A couple of news items with the Royals to get to. Will Jack Caglione ever pitch? Those kinds of things getting a little traction this week. So we'll talk to Jalen about that, just about how the team looks and are they being severely underrated? We think they are by most prognosticators, including Las Vegas. So we'll get into all of that. As well on the show here today. Shockers, winners last night at Rice. Snap a little losing streak they had. Not one that anybody was overly concerned with, but a losing streak nonetheless. So good to see them get back on track in that win last night. We'll break that down. We'll look ahead to the season finale this weekend. We will sort of take a look at what we think of this season overall. It has been an interesting one, to say the least. So we will get to all of that, all things Shockers, in just a little bit. Another wild and crazy day in the NFL. Another marquee player or two potentially on the move. We'll get to that as well. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm glad that it's finally Friday. I'm glad that we are getting you ready for that Friday. It's been a long, long week. And so glad to be here. Looking forward to jumping right in.
It will be a great weekend. We're going to get some good weather back. Yeah. It's been a little bit, gloomy this week weather-wise. Yeah. So it'll be nice to get that sunshine back a little bit. Ready for the spring. Everybody's ready for the spring. So
we're going to get a warm-up.
Speaking of the weather,
week,
Tommy,
though,
it is
we?
The 7th. What's that?
Aren't we going to get a warm-up next week? I believe that's the case.
Yeah. So going to my handy Storm Team 12 app right now, we are 10 days away from the start of March Madness here in Wichita, Tommy, which means the 10-day forecast comes into play beginning right now. And I'm just looking we're still 1 day away. We're still 1 day away. That's the week of the 17th.
Right.
I'm only seeing through the 16th. I'm not very good at math, but on that 16th here in Wichita, it looks like we're at about 58, partly cloudy. Right before that, it's a little bit nicer than that. So we're going to get up into the close to 80. I talked to Ross yesterday and he said, without looking at the way far out outlook, which it'd still be on, he's optimistic we'll be able to get some good weather. So hopefully it'll warm up a little bit. We'll start checking that next week because that's a That's what we're looking for now. How much is Mother Nature going to play along here soon as we get ready for March Madness basketball in Wichita? Can't wait for it. Can't wait for these conference tournaments either. We've got one more to go for all our teams in the men's side before we get there. And on the women's side, they're already here. So you've got K-State alive in the Big 12 tournament. And they won yesterday, and they play at 11 o'clock today against West Virginia. A team they're looking for a little revenge. Doesn't look like they're going to have Ayoka Lee back. She is in a boot yesterday during warmups. I think the hope is maybe for the NCAA tournament, so they're going to have to grind it out without her. We'll see. Wichita's Zianna Walker, Phillipsburg's Taryn Sides had nice games yesterday for the Cats. We'll see if they can follow it up. But the postseason's here. I can't wait for the postseason, Tommy. It is... And it's more than just like March Madness like it normally is, right? Because it really starts for us next week for K-State and Wichita State. Like, they got to win their tournaments to get in. So we're going to get that vibe next week. And then, of course, KU will see where they land in the tournament. Not in Wichita, but somewhere. And it'll be fun. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, you know, we'd love to see both K-State and Wichita State continue to build momentum going into their respective conference tournaments. You had both of them this week win. Kansas State winning on the road at Cincinnati. Wichita State winning last night at Rice. And
you both win ugly.
Both win ugly, but they both get victories. And both of them are back home this weekend. You've got Kansas State at home against Iowa State on Senior Day. That's going to be a huge challenge. But if the Wildcats can get that done, you know, then you feel, I think you feel better about their chances going into the Big 12 tournament, especially if Coleman Hawkins can get himself as close to 100% as possible before the Big 12 tournament. And then with Wichita State, you've got Senior Day on Sunday against Tulsa. Again, if you can get, you know, the final two regular season games as wins, and they've got one of those down, another one to go, then you, again, feel like you've got a little bit of a mini winning streak going into the American tournament next week as well. So, even though both of these teams, it's not like they're competing for a regular season conference title or anything at this point, I do think that both of their games this weekend against their respective opponents are important for them and important for how they feel going into their respective conference tourneys.
Yeah, I think important for different reasons too, right? I'm with you on that. I do think they're important. I think it's important for KU.
Yeah.
I think it's important for all three of them. But probably at this point, not going to alter my outlook for any of them in the tournament. I think I've seen enough over the past couple of weeks. It was good to see Wichita State just do what it needed to do last night. Like, if there is disaster for any of the three teams on, because they all get them at home this weekend, right? All the senior days are at home.
Right.
If there's disaster for any of them, it's not going to, I don't think I'll alter what I think about their chances in their respective conference tournaments. We kind of know now. I think we've seen K-State and Wichita State back on track enough that we know they've just, you know, they kind of both have a puncher's chance. I'd say Wichita State probably a slightly better chance just based on the grind of what the Big 12 has to offer. But we know they both have to get ugly. We know that's how they're going to have to win those games. And, you know, KU, we've talked about ad nauseum. Nothing changes there either. They're capable of beating anybody. They're capable of losing to anybody. Pretty odd year for them as well. But we'll get into all of that. We'll get into the Shockers next. Real quick, thanks to Crestview Country Club for being a sponsor of the program. We had our beer tasting last night, Tommy. It was delicious. What do we have? Free State
Brewery. Beer? Yeah, it was fantastic. It was wonderful.
A sour, a stout.
I love that oatmeal IPA. Stout, by the way. That was fun.
Yeah, I usually just kind of drink light see-through beer. So they were all fine. I really liked their lager, their seasonal lager, but it was fun. It was a good event, good crowd, had some snacks. And then you know what we did after we had the beer tasting? We went to the bar.
Of course we did.
Beer.
We absolutely did. We enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I always think about, you know, you and I and our preference for the light beer, the older that we get. I always think of Landman with Billy Bob Thornton, you know, and
that's
he drinks Ultras,
right.
And he's like, I quit drinking years ago. Well, you're drinking a Michelob Ultra. That's not alcohol.
That's not alcohol.
Yeah, I quit drinking years ago.
I quit drinking a long time. I'll just take an Ultra.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel that in my bones.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I do. So it was great. It was a big crowd at the bar last night, too. A couple of great listeners said what's up at the bar, and we appreciate them. as well. Always like seeing. That's one of the cool things about being out there is how many people listen to the show and then come talk to us about what's on the show. And so I love that. I love that. And shout out to those two guys who came and talked to us about the show yesterday at the bar at Crestview. So appreciate their support. Give them a call. Ask them about their memberships. When we come back, Shocker Talk next on Sports Daily.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Your legend begins aboard the Disney Destiny, the all-new ship from Disney Cruise Line, sailing November of 2025. Log in and listen to KFH on Odyssey for a chance to win a trip for four to set sail on the Disney Destiny in the national contest. All you need to do, listen for an hour on the Odyssey app. Find out more at kfhradio.com. Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Castor, and we are glad to be here with you. Shockers win last night, 63-59 over Rice. Told you, one-and-a-half-point line didn't seem like enough. They do ultimately end up covering it. I thought it'd be a little more, but they get it done. Winning on the road's hard. I get it. There's a lot of interesting things in the game. Let's start with the game, Tommy, and then we can kind of blow it out a little, you know, wider angle on the season as they'll, you know, play the finale before we are on the air again. But last night it was a game. Look, they won ugly, right? They didn't shoot the three. A 2 for 14. They didn't even get 40% from the field. But they get a 63-59 win over Rice, and they do it. They got to the free throw line a ton, which is going to continue to be something they must do to win these games. They must. I don't know who you call your game's MVP. They're, you know, Harlan Beverly off the bench scoring okay. Ronnie DeGray dominated on the boards, and then how about Bijan Cortez again late in the game? Tommy coming up with a clutch bucket when they needed it the most. If I told you Wichita State got a nothing burger out of a game where Corey Washington could only give you 16 minutes, that's been dangerous. You know, that's a dangerous thing. Well, they got it done last night with that factor. So there were a lot of little things, I think, and sort of an ugly win that you can be pretty optimistic about if you're a Shocker fan.
Yeah, it wasn't just, you know, Ronnie DeGray with the rebounding in general. It was his rebounding in the second half, and not just him, but Quincy Ballard and Corey Washington, all of those guys getting after it, rebounding, crashing those boards. And that was, I think, the key difference maker. You ask about an MVP. I mean, it's hard to, you know, overlook a guy that had 16 rebounds in the game and Ronnie DeGray in a game that absolutely required that because the shots just weren't falling for Wichita State. You don't get 16 rebounds from Ronnie DeGray, you don't win that basketball game. So I would definitely probably put that MVP on his shoulders for the game last night just because of the way that he was able to get after it rebounding.
Six offensive rebounds, by the way. So I think last night gives us a good story sort of what Wichita State's going to need to do. Like if we project it out into the conference tournament, like what would Wichita State have to do to be able to win the American Athletic Conference? Okay, let's think about that. I mean, sure, yeah, they could come out and shoot really well. That'd be great. Probably not going to happen. Not at least not every game. Maybe it happens once. Maybe it times out and happens against a really good team. That'd be awesome. But I don't think that's what you look for to count on in the tournament. I think that, you know, they must play good defense for sure, which they have. I mean, when was the last time, I mean, UAB and outside of UAB, it's been, I mean, we're looking at more than a calendar month since they've had a bad defensive game. Oddly enough, it's probably, you got to probably go back to Tulsa, as I'm just looking here, which is who they'll play on Sunday. So it'd be nice to see them maybe come in and shut them down. But you're talking about one out of like their last 10 games has been a game where you didn't feel really good about their defense. Has to start there. No question about it. That must be how Wichita State wins basketball games. Take that a step further. And I don't have them game by game pulled up, but they need to, at least, if they don't win the rebounding battle, they got to be right there. They can't get dominated on the boards. Okay. For me, anyway, they can't turn the ball over, which has not been a problem for this team in totality. You know, Bijan Cortez had too many last night again, but now he's giving you something to sort of offset that wild and crazy nature that he's always had. So that's good too. So we're like, for me, we're going through three things here, Tommy. I haven't even talked about the offense because I just don't count on the offense. And then probably the other thing offensively, they just have to get to the free throw line. Offense is not going to come easy for the Shockers. It hasn't come easy all season. Don't expect it. Expect them to get to the line, though, because that's how they've started to play, whether it's Harlan Beverly. How many did he have last night? Five free throws. Of course, Xavier Bell, we know his proficiency to get there. And anybody else, get to the free throw line, shoot a ton of them, and shoot a high percentage. If they can do those, what was that, four things, you're going to have a chance. But it has to start on the defensive side of the ball, and they must, if they don't play a good defensive game, they're going to be done.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that this team has shown throughout the course of the season they're not going to put on an offensive clinic most often.
Almost never.
It might be a bonus when it happens. That, you know, we've seen a couple of games where that has happened, and that might be due more to the opponent they're facing and the way that opponent plays defense than anything else. But I don't think you count on that game in and game out. If it's a bonus, if it happens, you know, you tip your cap to it and you say, hey, it was a good offensive game, but that's not what our calling card is. Our calling card is playing defense, getting to the free throw line, and being able to rebound. And if they can do those things well, then when that happens, and last night is a prime example of that, you don't have to have a highly proficient offensive night to be able to win a basketball game, at least in this conference, against a team that, let's face it, Rice is not very good. They're at the bottom of the conference. They're 4-14, you know, or approximately, they're getting to that point. They're pacing on that way in the conference under a first-year head coach. You know, that's a team that the Shockers should beat. They did beat, even despite a bad shooting night. So that sort of thing, I think you can hang your hat on a little bit. Like, look, guys, we don't need to go out there and shoot the lights out. If it happens, great. We'll be happy that we did. But we've got to do these other things really, really well. And they were able to do that last night.
That was, I mean, it was a great, now, Rice, like, oh, they beat Rice by four. Like, not trying to sit here and say that's a great performance.
No, not at all.
But it doesn't matter. Like it is their path to success in the conference tournament, right? I don't want to sit here with one game to go and say they have to shoot it better. They got to make more than three pointers in a game. They have to do. It's not going to happen. And the good news for fans is we've now seen that since the calendar turned to February, we know that now, right? They know they don't have like. Doesn't matter. It doesn't win them all ugly because that's what it takes. That's fine.
And how many of those games a season ago did Wichita State lose? You know, in their first year under Paul Mills, like they're learning how to grind out wins when they don't have their best stuff offensively, and that's a major difference from a season ago when so many of those games, you know, you look back on and you're like, man, they could have won that game and they didn't. And now it's the flip side. Now, of course, you know, you can always point back to January and you wish you had January back for the Shockers for sure. But now down the stretch, at least, you know, in the last month, they found ways to win games even when they don't have their best stuff.
So it's been, and I'm 100% with you. I'm looking back. Wichita State was picked fourth in the league this year. There's UAB was picked to win. Wichita State was picked fourth. Yeah, that's this year, right? Yeah, they were picked fourth this year.
Yep.
So they will probably finish seventh. I don't think they can jump FAU because they lost that game. I don't think they can jump FAU. Did they? No, they beat FAU. Did they play them twice? Do they have a chance to jump one more spot here? They might.
Yeah, no.
So they beat FAU. Yeah, they only played them one time.
Played them on the road.
I am assuming here, and you know what they say about assuming. I'm assuming that the tiebreaker for two teams when they've played once is head-to-head. So if that's the case and FAU loses their finale and Wichita State wins its finale, but then you've got a Temple situation as well, which what did they – this is I hate these big conferences. Like, it gets so hard. Remember, they lost to Temple. So I don't know what all the tiebreakers are. Anyway, right now they sit seventh. They could get as high as sixth in theory. They could drop as far as eighth in theory, and that's it. So somewhere between six and eight, they were picked fourth. How do we feel about that? I think if you'd have told me that before the season, I'd have said that's a disappointing season, for sure. Based on the way it all played out, what do you think? Has it been disappointing?
I think that if you, in the context of the way it all played out, because I agree with you, if you had told me at the beginning of the season that they would finish eighth after being picked fourth, and, you know, obviously we all know they're going to need to win the conference tournament if they want to go to the NCAA tournament. Yeah, I think in that context, you would look at it and say, yeah, that's disappointing. However, if you would have told me in late January that the Shockers would, you know, and again, we're assuming that they win on Sunday at home against Tulsa, that they would finish the regular season at 500 in conference play after the way they started in conference play, and they were down at the very bottom of the American, and they climbed their way up to eighth, I would take that. I'd be like, well, absolutely. Like that, yeah, it's disappointing overall from a macro view, but from the way that they started and the way that, you know, if they, let's say that they win on Sunday, you're looking at what a 7-2 finish in the conference season after that. You'd take that for sure.
You'd take it for sure. I agree with you 100%. It's strange because I do think, and the reality is too, like if you look at the standings, East Carolina is who FAU plays, by the way. So certainly a sort of a toss up game, I would say, if they get up that, so maybe they can get up to, you know, to sixth, which feels better because then you're a game behind really the rest of the field. Well, you had that North Texas game where you didn't get a good shot at the end. So I think they're probably right there. Here's the other way I think we look at it, because they're not going to finish high enough to satisfy our preseason expectations, no matter what happens. But I'm with you. We can be satisfied with the year because of how hot they've been to finish it. I think even more than the standings and where they finish, you got to look at it as like, where do you feel like they stack up in the league, right? The net right now has them as the fifth best team in the league behind Memphis, North Texas, UAB, FAU, a team they beat. That's probably to me a little better way to look at it, I think. And I think we'd probably be okay with that. I think our, you know, our optimism let us think it was going to be higher than that. And if we started the season over and played the entire conference schedule again, I think it would be.
I think it would be too, but then I also think that, you know, there were some warning signs even back in non-con, right? When they get boat raced by Florida, and Florida's turned out to be a really good team, but they get boat raced by Florida, they lose at home to UMKC, they struggle at home against friends. You know, like there were a couple of things, and I know that sandwiched in between there, they beat Kansas State by 20. You know, like I know all that stuff happened, but there were some red flags, like some warning signs early in the non-con.
Absolutely.
Where, you know, at least for me, I can only speak for myself, I'm kind of in the back of my mind like, okay, something like this might not go particularly well. But then that optimism sort of won it over and like, they'll be fine. They get into conference play, they'll be fine. And then they start off the conference season 1-7 and they lose to teams that they should beat. And not just like teams that you think that they should be, but teams that they are metrically better than. Like all of the metrics saying that they're significantly better than these teams that they lost to in the month of January. And I'm sure that if you were to talk to Paul Mills, the one constant would be, we wish we had the month of January back. Absolutely.
I think so too. Here's what's really cool about it to me and what I think I've learned over the course of this year, because we have been at points this year as critical as anybody ever will be at Wichita State. It deservedly so. They deserved it. Now, though, I think as we've played through it, my optimism for the program is probably as high as it was ever going to be this year in reality, because I think a couple of things, even when they were struggling, and we talked about this at the time, like KU clearly had a locker room problem for a little while this year. K-State clearly had a locker room problem for a little while this year. I never got that vibe from Wichita State, even when they were struggling the most. That never, to me, bled out in anything anybody was saying. Obviously, coach was frustrated, but the players kept the same messaging. Like, the effort was always there. They just weren't playing well. So I think that's one thing that can give you optimism about the direction of a program. I think the other more important thing is I really think we have seen coaching chops from Paul Mills and his staff to completely reinvent this team. It's one thing to reinvent yourself after a really bad start to the season, whatever. Remember, Wichita State was great before the Florida game, right? In a totally different way than they're great now. They in the middle of conference play, redefined who they are X's and O's wise. At least it seems that way to me. And to be able to do that like that in the middle of a season, in a season where at other times you had found success a different way, that's pretty impressive to me. And it gives me a lot of confidence that you have, there's a coaching staff there that is going to find the strengths of its team. Now, it took longer than we would have liked, right? Of course it did. But they got there. Like, I feel good about, again, no matter what happens on Sunday, don't really care. It's a senior day. I hope they have a great senior day. But I am confident in the abilities, I think, of the coaches to make that drastic of a change in the middle of a season. It's not an easy thing to do.
And don't forget that not only did they make that change, but the players bought into it as well. I mean, there's a resiliency that is remarkable there, where, you know, you're dealing with college kids. And it would be pretty easy for them after you start conference play 1-7 and you've got, you know, all these big time expectations and hopes and dreams crater in front of you, to be like, like, we're not going to buy into a wholesale change in the way that we're going to be doing things throughout the second half of the conference season. And they did. I mean, I feel like there's been that buy-in. You don't feel that division, at least as far as like battling identities and all of that. It was almost like Paul Mills and his staff said, we have to do it differently. And the team said, let's go. And it hasn't always been pretty. Case in point, last night wasn't a pretty game, but they found a way to win. And I think, again, I mentioned the word resiliency. It's resiliency when even when your offense, and especially in the second half, isn't working and the shots are not falling, for you to then have enough toughness mentally to still be able to go out and play elite level defense. And that's what they did. I mean, I can't even imagine how difficult it would be when your shots aren't falling. And I'm talking from an individual basis here, when your shots aren't falling, to then be just as locked in on the other end of the court and to try to shut down your opponent defensively. Because at least I'm probably weak-minded. I would just be thinking about the shot that I just missed and the fact I missed the last five and that we're not able to get anything to fall. They played outstanding defense in the second half, even while they weren't shooting the ball well at all. That's really difficult to do.
They've done that a lot, too. It's not just one time. And the worst part of their season, what you're talking about, is what would get away from them. They'd stop defending the three, right? Like, they would just, and I don't want to call it lazy. I'm not a smart enough basketball mind to call it lazy, so I'm not going to do that. But whatever it was.
Preoccupied, maybe? Like, I would be preoccupied. Like, man,
weren't, they weren't getting there. Now, those lapses have stopped.
Yeah.
Right? They have redefined themselves to some degree. Not totally offensively, but they definitely don't even, like, threes, just whatever. Like, if we hit a couple, that's awesome. Otherwise, we got to take care of the basketball. We got to get to the free throw line. And
the Shockers, by the way, when we talked about their defense, but I mean, and you mentioned turnovers right then. They had one turnover in the second half.
Yeah, they don't turn the ball.
So even the fact that, you know, again, like, when you're not shooting the ball well, you have to lean on those other things. You have to take care of it. So you can't give away possessions. And then you have to be able to lock them down and get rebounds. I mean, you know, even though, and I'm reading the, you know, Taylor Eldridge article from last night too, I didn't realize that even though they got a bunch of offensive rebounds down the stretch, the second chance points weren't there either. So it really didn't matter what they did. They weren't scoring,
you just had to lock them down.
But you have to lock them down in other ways.
Isn't it funny too? Now we look at, as you know, one game to go before the postseasons. The formula is sort of the same. It's certainly the same for Wichita State and KU, certainly. And look, there are varying levels of it, right? KU is better, more talented, and all those things. But the path is the same. Anywho, NFL, Tommy, another wild and crazy day. Trey Hendrickson is the big one, probably. There's a lot of them, though. You know, Christian Kirk going to the Texans, I think, is a big deal. I love that for the Texans, who don't know what's going to happen with Tank Dell long term. Love it for the Texans. And good for Jacksonville, who's going to have to cut him anyway for getting something for him. So that was a pretty significant move. But this Trey Hendrickson news that he has been granted the ability to request a trade, that's another one. You thought Joey Bosa was a big deal being cut. Now Trey Hendrickson's out there. We're looking at an offseason here, Tommy, where Joey Bosa, Myles Garrett, and Trey Hendrickson are available to varying degrees. Three of the best pass rushers in football are all potentially out there for somebody to go get, which is fascinating to me. What do you do? Then you add in DK Metcalf is available. There's just a lot of players out there. I honestly, like, Cincinnati's situation, we'll start with Hendrickson because Myles Garrett's the most attractive, but Hendrickson's right there. A dude that's been at the top of the game, the top of the pass rushing game for 2 years. I do think last year slightly inflated because Cincinnati knew they were going to be up against a passing attack in every game that they played. So he could pin his ears back just a little bit. He was great the year before too. Cincinnati's making a decision where they're going to go with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. They're going to get both of those guys paid, to hell with defense and see what happens. I don't think I agree with that. I think if you were telling me I had to choose Trey Hendrickson or T. Higgins, as much as I love T. Higgins and I love T. Higgins, I think I'd take Hendrickson and take my chances. But it is supposedly a deep draft class at pass rushers. So, okay, Cincinnati, we'll see what happens. But that's the decision they're making. Hendrickson being out there is interesting because he and Garrett both are, like, if they're traded, they're going to get first round value. But it's one of those things where you have to be willing to give up draft capital to get them, Tommy, and you have to be willing essentially to give them their long-term extension. They're both likely, I would say, to surpass Max Crosby's deal. He just signed to become the highest paid non-quarterback. So you have to be ready to commit that kind of deal and give up draft capital to get either of them. That probably makes it a little bit more difficult to find a trade partner.
Going back to T. Higgins, I'm still not 100% convinced that he will be a member of the Bengals when next season kicks off. I wouldn't be shocked if the whole reason that they tagged him was to trade him. Now, they could always sign him to a long-term extension, but that's been floating out there for a while. Same thing with Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, I know, like, there's been a lot of discussions about what that wide receiver room looks like long-term, but I'm not 100% convinced that he will be there when the season starts. I wouldn't be shocked if they try to find a trade partner and, you know, try to free up even more room. But yeah, the Trey Hendrickson stuff is surprising to me. Just because, you know, he's been a pretty dominant guy. He's been a pretty dominant pass rusher in his time with the Bengals. And you compare and contrast, you've got Hendrickson, you mentioned Myles Garrett, and of course Joey Bosa, all three of those guys available, while at the same time, Max Crosby is getting an extension with the Raiders. And so it's interesting how teams are valuing pass rush. And how, like, some are like, hey, we're gonna cut you. We're not gonna sign you long term. We're not gonna make you the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. But then meanwhile, the Raiders to Max Crosby are like, yeah, we'll go ahead and sign you. We'll go ahead and do that. And I know financially, cap space wise, every team is different, but it's just interesting to see some of these top tier elite level pass rushers now out there available for teams to go and get. Meanwhile, Max Crosby is getting the largest non-quarterback deal in the NFL.
Yeah, and Charles Minihue said something about I'm out. He said something somewhere on social media. So he's another one that goes out there, but he maybe becomes a discount. Is Charles Minihue like a big loser in this to know that these other guys are available? Probably.
Well, anytime you have, you know, more supply in a position, the demand kind of levels out and goes down a little bit. I mean, it's the same way we talked about it yesterday with some of the wide receivers that are free agents that are not the top free agent wide receivers. Their value goes down. You know, guys like I'm thinking Hollywood Brown and Juju and DeAndre Hopkins, like because you have these top tier elite level Devontae Adams and, you know, others that are available out there right now for signing. It's the same way with pass rush. You know, you've got some of the next tier down pass rushers, and I would put Charles Minihue in that list. He's a good pass rusher, but he's not Myles Garrett, right? He's not Trey Hendrickson. It brings his value down somewhat, or at least levels it off, because you've got guys that are above him that are going to be looking for deals now too.
It also makes me wonder, and we talked about this the other day, so if the trend now is to run the ball a little bit, if the trend is for defenses to play quarterbacks a different way, is there any, and I don't think this is the case, but I'll say it anyway, it is the position being devalued at all, right? Is defense being played a different way but that's never going to not be important. It's the most disruptive thing you can do is rush the passer. It's how the Eagles just won a Super Bowl. So I don't think that's the case. But it's interesting to see the kind of Joey Bosa's makes sense, right? He's always hurt. He's older. He's expensive. I get it. And it's not like Cleveland wants to trade Myles Garrett. They don't want to trade Myles Garrett. So maybe Hendrickson is an outlier in an offseason where a few other odd things have happened. It could be that simple. It really could be. And I don't even know what the appetite to get Hendrickson is because of what it'll take to get him and knowing, and Cincinnati may just be like, look, you can go out and seek a trade. If you can go out there and find us a first round pick in a return, we know we're probably not going to be able to re-sign you after your current deal. Okay, go do it. We'd love the help. Thanks. I mean, it could be that simple because I'm sure they'd love to have him back if he doesn't find a trade partner, right? Like if they can't find a good fit, you don't think the Bengals will be like, welcome him back with open arms?
Sure. And I know with Myles Garrett at the same way, you know, it's kind of the same level. You know, the Browns are trying to figure out everything that they can possibly do to clear space. And I know they would love to keep Garrett for sure, but I know they restructured Deshaun Watson's contract again, a simple restructure. So it's not like it's a major deal, but they did a little bit to try to free up some room there. You know, they've got to try to figure some things out as well to get out from underneath that terrible Watson contract. And, you know, if Myles Garrett ends up being a casualty of that, that's unfortunate. I mean, that's roster mismanagement. That's cap mismanagement. That's all of those things. So you've got, you know, these teams that are trying to figure it all out. It makes you grateful for the fact that with Kansas City, they've been a lot more masterful in managing the salary cap. You can't pay everybody, but they've done better outside of Juwan Taylor's deal. They've done better overall in managing their salary cap. So they're not in situations quite like this.
Yeah, it's even they're always difficult. They're going to watch Minihue walk. They're probably going to watch Justin Reed walk. They might watch Nick Bolton walk. They just traded Joe Tooney. Like, it's never easy. They're never easy decisions.
But they don't have guys that are requesting trades away from the team, right? Like, they don't have guys that they would like to keep that are requesting to be done with them. That's one area where it is different, right? I mean,
Tyreek Hill did that exact
thing. I'm talking about right now. I'm talking about era. Like, they don't have
even but they've handled it well
right.
When it's like when it happened
that's my
with
point.
Hill.
Yeah.
They did a fantastic job. They've been good at navigating it. The problem is there's not enough money in a salary cap to go around. So what are you supposed to do? Like the teams, there's not much the teams can do. It'd be one thing if they were just sitting on a pile of money there, but they can only spend so much. So you have to make the calls. Cincinnati's just making the call to go with the two wide receivers for Joe Burrow. I mean, that's pretty simple. And it's really unfortunate for one of the worst defenses in football. Something to pay attention to if you're a fantasy football player, because their defense is probably going to suck again now. And Joe Burrow has his full complement of weapons. So, I think it really hurts Cincinnati. They'll have to have a magical draft or an offseason probably to be able to contend for a title next year. But we know they'll be able to get there offensively. But if you needed to improve your defense, you just traded away one of the league's best defensive players or are seemingly about to. at his request. At his request, not theirs. But it's simple math. They sign Higgins, they can't sign Hendrickson. Hendrickson knows that, and he says, hey guys, can I go get my deal somewhere else now? And I don't blame him after what you just saw for Max Crosby. He's had nothing but good things to say. They've had nothing but good things to say. Meanwhile, I'm just seeing reporting that Myles Garrett and the Browns owner are refusing to even talk to each other. You know, both directions. So, for what it's worth, it doesn't always go rosy like it did for Tyreek Hill, for instance, or it's doing. All right, we'll take a quick break. Hour number two coming up.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you on a Friday. We've got Jalen Thompson coming up later this hour. We'll check in from spring training with the Kansas City Royals. He's a Royals insider. If you want to win some HTO, let's do that right now. You can get your hands on a free iced tea, more than 26 flavors to choose from. So be good for a free cup of tea at either Wichita location, east or west, or down in Derby. All you got to do is text the keyword tea, T-E-A, to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Again, that's tea to 20357. Good luck, everybody. Welcome back in. We're getting ready for a weekend of college basketball. We are continuing to try, as best anybody can, to follow this wild and crazy NFL offseason, which hasn't even, I don't think, technically started yet. We got a lot of teams without quarterbacks, and we don't have a lot of movement on the quarterback spots. We'll get into that this hour as well, and then look ahead a little bit to KU and K-State's games this weekend on the hardwood. Tommy, This offseason's been nuts, but we knew it was going to be because you've got names like Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr potentially, Sam Darnold, who was an MVP candidate last year. To one degree or another, all kind of looking for homes. Brock Purdy still doesn't have his deal with San Francisco. Is they're trying to evaluate and do whatever it is that they think they need to do. Doesn't it all start there for a lot of these teams? What are we waiting for? Who wants who? Where do we think Purdy's going to get re-signed, right?
I think so. I mean, what other option realistically do the Niners have? I mean, they could
Aaron
absolutely
Rodgers,
go get
Cousins,
Aaron Rodgers.
Derek Carr,
but yeah. I mean, you know me, you know, like those old sayings that I love, like, isn't the old saying, a bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush? Like, you've already got
I still don't even know what that one means.
I think that's relevant. I don't know. But, like, you've got Brock Purdy there right now. Brock Purdy's not a bad quarterback. He's not a great quarterback, but he took you to a Super Bowl. So, like, why would you walk away from that right now for something that's more unknown? Like, is a diminished Aaron Rodgers going to get you over the hump? Probably not. I don't think so. Is Kirk Cousins going to get you over the hump? He hasn't been able to do that in his entire career up to this point with every team he's played for. Like, I just don't know why you would want to move away from at least a proven commodity in Brock Purdy to get somebody that has never played in your system before, and that is just a complete unknown.
Because he's going to cost you $50 million. I mean, that's the crux. By the way, the bird in the bush thing.
Yeah, a bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush.
Do you know, by the way, why hummingbirds hum?
No.
Because they don't know the lyrics.
Huh. Oh, Max, you got to be on your toes for that, Max. You got to come on, man. You got to be ready for that. There we go. There it is.
There we go. There it is. A little bird humor for you.
I'm going to look up that saying, by the way, because I want to make sure I'm actually using it right.
But $50 million for Purdy. I mean, I get it.
Oh, okay. I got it. Okay. So this is the definition of a bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush. It's okay. Better to be content with what you have than to risk losing everything by seeking more. So I use that, right? That's the right.
You used it right, but I still don't understand why that's who has a bird in their hand, or birds aren't ever in bushes.
Brock Purdy is the bird in the hand.
No, I get it. I get the reference.
You're actually talking about the proverb. Okay, I don't know.
Like, why? Like, who has birds in hands? And, like, that's not a thing. Like,
I think the
don't
point.
Put
I think
the wagon
point is,
before the horse. Right, like those make more literal.
I think the
sense.
Point is if you're whole, like think of a bird as like you like your dinner tonight. Like you need to go hunting and get a bird to eat dinner, and you've got one in your hand, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to throw this away because there are two over there, and I'm going to go try to get two of them. Well, you've already got the one. Be content with what you have. That's what it means.
I get the meaning of the proverb. I don't get the reference to birds and hands and bushes.
You have to quote Sheryl Crow. It's not having what you want. It's wanting what you have. Sheryl Crow.
I love it.
Soak up the
sun. That's actually prophetic.
She's a song. She's the songbird of our generation.
Another bird. There you go. So here we go. Brock Purdy last year, Tommy, if we look at yardage, which, you know, their offense is designed a little different. I think he's right outside the top 10. He has a good completion percentage, 20 touchdowns to 12 interceptions. One of the worst ratios among starters last year. A quarterback rating. Let's sort it by quarterback rating. Because you're going to get outliers when we do that. Of the, you know, of the main starters, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, and then next page, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13th in quarterback. So average. So the point of all that is to me, like he's, I don't want to call him an average quarterback. He's above average for the league for sure. He's. Let's call it good, not great. But I think the conundrum for the 49ers, it's sort of like the Cowboys have faced over the years with Dak. He's good for their system, right? He's a good fit where he is. Is Brock Purdy even close to what he is in San Francisco anywhere else?
Who knows? Nobody knows that. You can't know that. He's only played for the Niners.
It's a question for sure, but I don't think he would be. Is Dak Prescott the same quarterback somewhere else he's been able to be in Dallas? I don't think he is. So, you know, there are some quarterbacks where we look at him and we're like, oh, they'd be great anywhere. Like Mahomes isn't probably going to be as good without Andy Reid. I don't even think that's unfair. So I don't want to like overstate that. But when you go to the negotiating table, yeah, Brock Purdy took San Francisco to the Super Bowl. Awesome. So did Jimmy Garoppolo. They've got a good system in place. So as you're evaluating your finances, if you're San Francisco, part of the reason you've been able to do this is because you've had inexpensive quarterbacks, whether it be Garoppolo or whether it be Purdy. You're not going to have that anymore very soon. So I get it. That's why this one's probably going to be a really complicated negotiation. I think the 49ers would love to have Brock Purdy back. But when you're looking at it from a business sense, do you want to have him back at $50 million a year? Because now his value's gone. The value of his contract is gone. So when the value of his contract is gone, now how valuable is Brock Purdy and his 20 touchdowns and 12 interceptions last year? That's the problem here and why this one could get a little complicated. Because the 49ers have to consider that, right? Yeah, we could have Brock Purdy for 3 years and $150 million, or we could have Aaron Rodgers for 1 year and $35 million, whatever it is that Rodgers, you know, like what's the difference there? What's the play? I don't think it's as simple as just they got to re-sign Brock Purdy.
Well, so let's say
I don't think he's that kind of quarterback.
Let's say they move away from Brock Purdy. Let's say Aaron Rodgers comes in. They get him on a 1 year deal. They already don't have Debo. It looks like they're, you know, at least considering the potential of trading away Brandon Ayuk. Who does Aaron Rodgers have? Like they're going to have to be active there too, right? Like that's going to have to be part of it.
I mean, at that point, if you bring in Rodgers, you probably can bring in Davante Adams for a year. I mean, you're definitely
pushing it all.
How'd that experiment
go with the Jets this
year? No.
What
I'm saying, you're definitely pushing it all in for that year, but you also have to think about what Brock Purdy did last year and like, what's Brock Purdy going to do without Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk? And now you're committed to $50 million a year for 3 years. I don't think it's any better. You know what I mean? Like, I think Aaron Rodgers had a better, say what you want. Like, his year was probably better than Brock Purdy's last year. So
who's more likely to take the Niners to a Super Bowl next season, Brock Purdy or Aaron Rodgers?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because if you're only talking about this coming season, then that's got to be the number one question. If you're talking about the future, if you're talking about planting the seeds for what you're going to do in the next 5 years, whatever, if you like Rodgers as a bridge type guy to go to play 1 year for you and then you can draft or get somebody in free agency or whatever that is after that, then that's one thing. That's one conversation to have. If you don't want to pay Brock Purdy $50 million for however many years down the road, that's a different conversation entirely. If we're talking about just this season, and you talked about pushing it all in, whatever, for the Niners, and I think we both can agree that that window for the Niners, the current window they're in, doesn't have a whole lot left, especially the fact that they're moved away from Debo and they're
Christian McCaffrey.
Like, right, exactly. Who's more likely to take you to a championship this coming season, Brock Purdy or Aaron Rodgers?
I don't know. Aaron Rodgers, I think, was better than Brock Purdy last year. I mean, just kind of definitively was better, honestly. Derek Carr was better before he got hurt, for sure. Another guy that might be out there. I don't know the answer to that. And the problem is, if you don't think Brock Purdy is the kind of quarterback who's going to go out there and win despite who's around him, and there are those guys, right? Mahomes and Allen and Lamar and Joe Burrow, and probably now we could maybe say Jalen Hurts, although he's always had a good cast. So have some of those other guys. I think, you know, after two Super Bowl appearances and the win and everything, you could put Jalen Hurts there. Like, who?
I mean,
is Brock Purdy
going
to be one of the guys that goes and wins despite what's on the roster? I don't know that I think he is.
But I also don't know if Aaron Rodgers at this point in his career can win despite your roster. I mean, remember.
But you're only stuck with, if you went that way, you're only stuck with Rodgers for 1 year, whereas you'd be stuck with Purdy now as you try to rebuild.
It depends upon the priority. Like, is it more important to push everything in right now this season, or is it to look ahead for the future? Keep in mind, it's been 15 years since Aaron Rodgers has been to the Super Bowl. 15 years. Brock Purdy was there 2 years ago.
Yeah, don't misunderstand. Like, Aaron Rodgers isn't the end-all, be-all. Like, that's not even... But he represents another option for San Francisco that doesn't tether them potentially to a quarterback that may not be able to get it done. Let's continue this conversation on the other side, and then we'll transition in the segment as well to some college hoops this weekend. We got Jalen Thompson coming later in the hour. Stick around. Sports Daily coming right back.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
On our way into work, you want to keep listening to Sports Daily even after you park the car. With the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com, you can. Just download the app. Visit Odyssey.com. Search for KFH. Download the Odyssey app today to get started. Appreciate everybody that listens to us on the app whenever and wherever it is that you do that. We appreciate your being here with us. You can also leave us voice messages there and, you know, tell us how much you think we suck. That'd be great. We might even put it out over the air. No, we love everybody. Hope everybody's...
Why would anybody tell us that we suck?
I don't know. Those people, maybe they're feeling froggy. Maybe they think it'll be funny. And maybe we suck. I don't know.
Speak for yourself.
Brock Purdy does not suck. But he's also not, we use the quarterback word elite, is what we're talking about to end the last segment. Let's finish this through, and then we'll talk a little college hoops here before we get Jalen Thompson in a little bit later. I get the issue. I think San Francisco needs to re-sign him. I think it's challenging, though, because to what? Right? Like, he shouldn't. If Brock Purdy digs his heels in the sand and says, I want to be the highest paid quarterback in football, if I'm San Francisco, I would say, good luck, go finding that deal. Like, see you later. Because nobody's going to give you that deal. We're certainly not. Nobody else will either. That, I don't think Brock Purdy has a tremendous amount of bargaining power right now. And I think that's the problem for Brock Purdy, and why this might get contentious. I think Kyle Shanahan loves Brock Purdy. I think the Niners probably love Brock Purdy. I think they probably love the way he fits. But again, when you're the front office and not the coach, Do you love the way he fits when he's not on a rookie deal? Do you love the way he fits when he is a free agent? And that is where I think the challenge comes. He's got a $5 million cap hit this year before he's an unrestricted free agent. He wants a deal. He's earned a deal. But how much is the deal, right? If he says, I want to be the highest paid, again, if I'm the 49ers, I say, good luck. Go find that deal. You ain't going to find it. No team in football would make Brock Purdy the highest paid quarterback in football. Right? Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong about that at all. I mean, I think that he's got to, it's a two-way street. I think he's got to be realistic on his value as well, whether that's with the Niners or with another team. And you know, there's no indication, at least from what I've read so far, that he is going to play hardball and want to be the highest paid quarterback. Like, I don't think that that's the path that we're going down. But if that does end up happening, then yeah, I mean, I wouldn't blame the Niners, even if I would like to continue to have Brock Purdy lead my team. I would understand them saying, look, we're just not comfortable committing to you as the highest paid quarterback for, you know, however long. It's a give and take. That's what every negotiation is. I think that he's got to appropriately value himself. Maybe there's another team out there that's quarterback needy enough that is willing to give him more money. And then in that case, go and do that. But I do think that the best case scenario, I think what's going to be best for both parties is if he's able to work it out and figure out a way to stay long-term with the Niners at a rate that is appropriate for both sides.
Let's look at right now in the league. Dak Prescott, of course, reset it last year at $60 million a year, which is so stupid, but whatever. Right now, you've got Prescott, Burrow, Jordan Love, Trevor Lawrence, Tua, Jared Goff, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, and Jalen Hurts all above $50 million. So if it was as simple as saying, all right, you know, $50 million a year for Brock Purdy, that's sort of where he would slot in. Behind those guys, ahead of Kyler Murray, ahead of Deshaun Watson, ahead of Kirk Cousins, ahead of Patrick Mahomes, which is laughable, of course, ahead of Josh Allen, which is laughable, of course, ahead of Matt Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr, Baker Mayfield, and then you get down to a level where he's clearly above those guys. So, you know, where do you factor him in? If you think he's more like Matt Stafford or Baker Mayfield, which I kind of do, quite honestly, it's going to be more like $40 million a year. If you're Purdy, though, you're going to say, I'm certainly better than, you know, Deshaun Watson and Kirk Cousins and Kyler Murray. And now you're looking at more like $50 million a year. I think this lands at $50 million a year. I think the Niners would be comfortable with that if they could shrink down the length of the deal. Of course, you know, Purdy's not going to want to do that. But it's, if you're John Lynch, the Niners GM, you have to think about it as, okay, if we commit to Purdy, what do we have around him as he gets older, as we just traded away Debo, as Kittle gets older, as Trent Williams gets older, as Fred Warner gets older, as Bosa gets older? Like, are you really going to be able to compete with Purdy when their ultra-talented roster ages out in the next handful of years? Or do you try to tether it to a window that exists with those guys? But that would require Purdy to take a shorter deal than most of these quarterbacks are taking. This one is probably the most complicated we've seen since Dak Prescott, honestly. Like, it's sort of like Prescott. You're trying to pay a guy who's been good, but also give him a good enough supporting cast because he's not like best. Still allow him to have a chance to win it. It's hard.
But can't you try to accomplish both of those things at the same time? Like, can't you try to accomplish the short term and the long term together? I mean, that's what Brent Veach does every single year. I mean, and even just earlier this week, like, the Chiefs have this window, right? But they're extending that window because they traded a 32-year-old guard in exchange for, you know, you would think, conceivably re-signing their 25-year-old guard long-term. Like, you can take the current window and try to extend it. So I think that the conversation, honestly, for me, is less about Brock Purdy himself and more about what's John Lynch going to do to extend that window longer. And as those other players start aging out, Kittle and McCaffrey and Bosa and, like, you know, these other guys, What are you going to do to continue to if you're going to lock yourself into Brock Purdy long term, then you also have to be committed to extending that window and not going through a full-fledged rebuild. I look at what the Bills went through last year, and in my mind, I thought they were rebuilding. I thought it was like, we're tearing this thing down to the studs around Josh Allen, and it's going to probably take a little bit of time to get it back up and running, and it didn't. Like, and Josh Allen is not Brock Purdy and vice versa, so there's a difference there, but they basically committed to stripping it all down and rebuilding it. It just so happened that they had an uber talented quarterback where they didn't need to, you know, necessarily worry about how long it took to make that rebuild. The Niners, it's a different situation. I think you've got to be a lot more strategic and deliberate in how you're extending that window. But
yeah,
I think it can be done.
$150 million. But my point in all of it is Purdy's going to have to make a concession. He's just going to have to, or it could get real dicey. If Purdy puts his heels in the sand and says, nope, I want to be the highest paid guy, because that's what this league does. They, you know, young quarterback on the first deal, then I think he's going to have a problem, and it will be a fascinating one to watch. And then you get the trickle down effect of, okay, what about Rodgers? What about Carr? What about Cousins? What about Sam Darnold? What about Russell Wilson? Maybe even, like, there's all these other guys that outside of Russell Wilson, I would guess at least Rodgers and Sam Darnold are starters next year. I would guess that Carr and Cousins could also be, at least at the start of the year, starters. So we'll see what happens. It's a fascinating quarterback offseason, as it always is. Let's talk a little college hoops here, Tommy, because we've got Jalen Thompson in next segment to talk Royals. You got two senior days this weekend, KU, K-State. I said earlier, it's not, I don't think much is going to change this weekend. I mean, of course, we would like to see them both win on their senior days. They should, right? We're not going to have lines yet, so I wouldn't. K-State's not going to be favored at home, but it'll be close probably. And KU will be favored over Arizona at home, I'm pretty sure. I'd like to see KU close out a game. Let's put it that way. I'd love to see KU close out a close game late. K-State, I'm just not as worried. I'd like to see Coleman Hawkins be healthy going into the Big 12 tournament. That's the most important thing for K-State. Win, lose, don't care. I need to know that Coleman Hawkins is healthy. For KU, can they make a big play late in a game? Can a guard make a big play late in a game? What is Diggy Coit going to give them now in this game? And what's interesting to me about the KU thing is they could go beat Arizona and just lean in on a senior day, lean into Dickinson and Adams and beat Arizona. They could totally do that. And they might. Wouldn't it be nice to see, though, if they had to do it maybe in a little different way? If it was a close game and you had to let the guards go make a play, like see Diggy Coit grow into that role a little bit? I don't know. Like, I it's hard because KU's been hard to evaluate all season long at what you want to see from them. And what's even possible for them.
Well, and I think on top of that, too, with Kansas in a clutch situation, because I think that, you know, it's probably fairly likely, at least, that, you know, this is going to be probably a one possession game down the stretch. That's just kind of the way that I think Arizona plays and the way that KU has played this season. I don't think that we're going to see a scenario where either team is going to be able to pull away. I could be wrong, but I think it's going to be a close game down the stretch. So, yeah, we need to see Kansas be able to be clutch because they haven't been clutch. But then also, it's not just on the offensive end. I would love to see a guy like Diggy Coit or even Zeke Mayo. I mean, that'd be huge for KU.
Getting
him back on
track.
To see Mayo back on track in a clutch situation. I'm not going to hold my breath about that, but that would be great. It's also about getting the stops on the other end, too. In the last two games that KU has played, when you're talking about top-tier opponents in Houston and Texas Tech, every time one of those teams needed a clutch basket, they got it. KU was not able to shut them down on the defensive end of the court. And a lot of times, those clutch shots came from beyond the arc. So I would love to see that from Kansas. It's not just how can you guys go down and score when you need a bucket, but how can you stop a really good team when it matters most? And you need to get that stop. And we haven't seen either one of those things from Kansas. I go back to before they started the last five-game stretch of the regular season. And I remember saying, like, hey, don't get too excited if Kansas beats Oklahoma State and Colorado, because I think they're probably going to lose the final three games. They're one game away from that prediction coming true. So they've got to get, in my opinion, they've got to get this senior day game, not just for seeding purposes, but just for pride, just for a little bit of, like, swagger on senior day inside Allen Fieldhouse. KU doesn't lose those games. You don't lose on senior day in Allen Fieldhouse. You've got to get this one, I think, for pride, for swag, for ego, for all of that. The Jayhawks have to have this one.
Let's go back to when we were having the discussion about the Final Five. And you know, we ran out all the scenarios and we certainly disagreed on their chances to do anything. Do you think that the way that they have played the last two has encouraged you at all off of maybe where you thought it would be in that five game scenario if they didn't win any of them? Because I think it probably has. Remember, that was coming right out of Utah, out of the Utah trip, and how bad it was. I do think, regardless of what happens Saturday, because I'm not sure that it's ultimately going to matter too much to KU's chance. I think they are what they are. I do think seeing them have a shot to beat both Tech and Houston, and it's not excuse me, it's not anything else, but it would have been easy, I think, to imagine a scenario where going into that five-game stretch where they got housed by both of those teams. They did not do that. And if, like, so I think, like, their abilities and their X's and O's sort of are what they are, but I think their attitude and energy has certainly gotten back on track from what it was when we were first having that conversation.
Look, I think that, sure, if they had gotten just smacked around by Houston and Texas Tech, that would be absolutely disappointing. But at the same time, we're talking moral victories here. They still lost both of those games.
That's not what I'm trying to
do. And here's the thing. They lost both of those games. They were incredibly unclutch in both of those games.
Totally.
And especially from the guard position, right? Like the turnovers and just the lapses, the mental lapses, all of that, the execution issues, things that, you know, like I remember mentioning it too, like Bill Self leaving a timeout in his pocket at the end of the Tech game, like all of those different things. I don't want to say I'm more optimistic because I'm not. Like, they found another way to lose. They weren't able to to pull it out. So no, I don't think I am more optimistic long term. I think that you lose by 30 to Houston. I thought that was maybe on the table. Maybe not 30, but losing by double digits I thought was absolutely in the realm of possibility against Houston, and maybe the same thing for Texas Tech. Neither one of those things happened. That's good, sure. Like, patch on the back, awesome. You didn't get blown out by either one of those teams. I'm not sure that it gives me a whole lot more hope, though, as we're talking about the tournament.
So let me, I'll try to explain, and it's really hard to explain, and I've struggled with it for a while. When the Utah trip happened, because we've thought KU, you know, well before the Utah trip, was going to end up it's going to be matchup dependent. They're going to have to play good defense. Like nothing's really changed for KU in the last 2 months of basketball. What changed for me on the Utah trip was the effort, right? They just they were falling apart. And so I think for me, it's not moral victories. It's not anything. They're just when they finished the Utah trip, like what was fading away was the thought that they have the ability to go hang with any team in the country. That was fading for me at that point. That's where it's like, I got to see. Now I'm not feeling that way anymore. I don't think they're going to do anything crazy or like, we still got to see the matchups and all that thing, all those things. But at minimum, I think they have stopped falling apart at the seams. So they're sort of just back to this. Yeah, they've got a chance in every game they play, but they can't ever get it done.
I get that.
At least back to that.
I can agree with you on that. I mean, I think that that's the case. Like, I don't think that we're going to, you know, unless they get matched up in the NCAA tournament against a team that can just push them around and out-tough them and then also make big-time shots, and KU has to try to match threes with twos. At that point, yeah, you might be looking at that's going to be a really difficult matchup and probably a loss let's be honest, for the Jayhawks. It probably would be if they're matched up against one of those teams in the NCAA tournament. I think about, like, they've ran up against those buzzsaws in the NCAA tournament before.
That's Houston defined, what you just described.
Right. Well, right. So, yeah. So, I mean, but I think that at the same time, too, and I posed this question before, Kansas in the NCAA tournament, it's a one-possession game with a minute to go. Do you have any confidence at all that Kansas is going to be able to be clutch enough to close out a game and get a win? Because I don't. And I don't think that even the Houston and Texas Tech game have made me more confident that they can do that. In fact, I've probably gone even the other direction on that a little bit, just because I don't have a whole lot of faith whatsoever that they'll be able to close out a game like that in that scenario. I just don't think that that's in their DNA.
Yeah, listen, I don't disagree. I think it's ultimately matchups are going to have to play a factor here, and I'm just like, they need to play teams that are both that just aren't very good offensively, but that are still good teams when you get into the matchups of the low single digits, right? So I'm just looking at KenPom to try and find like those kinds of descriptions. I don't think it's going to be a team that's really good offensively, but maybe another team like Tennessee, for example, is a team they're the best defensive team in the country, but they're not like an elite, elite offensive team. That'd be a team maybe you'd like to get matched up with. I don't think it's going to be a team like Alabama, right, who's really good offensively and not as good defensively, because I think a good, not great, elite defense can still slow KU down. I think the trouble is when you play a great offense and they hit some shots, and then you just don't have the ability to keep up with that.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And that insider is Jalen Thompson, KC Star, beat reporter for the Kansas City Royals. You can follow him at Jalen Thompson on X. Glad to have Jalen with us again here on a Friday. Jalen, how's spring training treating you?
It's going good. It's going good. You know, it's almost that time.
It is almost that time. It's really close to that time. So as we come down this home stretch, if you want to call it that, I don't think we're quite to the home stretch, but we're getting closer. What is the top priority right now, do you think, for the Royals and what they're looking at, what they're trying to evaluate at this point?
I think it comes down to who's going to play in the outfield, who's going to be the three guys that you can consistently lean on out there to open the season. Will it be Jonathan India? Will it be Michael Massey out there on opening day? The way MJ Melendez is hitting right now, he's certainly shown an improvement this spring. Does he earn a spot in that left field to start the season? And then if that's the case, how do you divvy up third base? Because you know India and Massey are going to play every day. So they have a lot of questions that they need to figure out with that left side of the defense. And if they can figure that out, then I think they can put a competitive lineup together to go out and face the Cleveland Guardians on March 27th.
Let's talk about the rotation a little bit, Jalen. There's been some speculation heating up over the last couple of days that Chris Bubich may have solidified the fifth starter role in the rotation. Are you hearing that? Is that premature? Is there still a battle going on for what that fifth rotation spot looks like?
I think Chris Bubich will probably be the guy that will rightfully earn that fifth starter spot. He's definitely certainly a front runner right now. You can't count out Alec Marsh. You can't count out Daniel Lynch IV. Marsh has to continue to get back and get into live games. You know, he was delayed to start the spring. So when you have that and you have Daniel Lynch that it can also operate in the bullpen as well, and he's also left-handed, it seems like Chris Bubich has a firm hold right now on that fifth starter spot. But we'll see what happens as the rest of spring goes. But I think that's a good bet to see Bubich in that fifth spot as the front runner.
I want to talk about yesterday, Jack Caglione. The conversation with him continues. Not a timeline or anything else, but as it pertains to him as a two-way player, what is the chance? And I get it. They're going to focus on hitting, and I don't disagree with it. But what is the chance, would you guess, that at some point when Caglione is a regular part of the roster that he could also double over as any kind of pitcher for this organization?
Those chances, I won't close the door on that if I was just looking on the outside looking in, but I would say that it might be kind of slim, you know, because you're asking a lot of a player to come up and then be a hitter and a pitcher. There's a reason why only Shohei Ohtani is doing it at this level now. And before him, it was Babe Ruth, which was like almost 90 years ago, 100 years ago. So it's very tough to do. I won't say that they won't give him an opportunity to do that at some point, but it's going to be tough. And they like his bat so much. And I think he and his impact for the Royals in the future is going to be with the bat. So I think that's kind of where it will be. But like I said, you don't know. They might need him in a game that might be a blowout and they let him get on the mound for a couple of innings. We never know.
You had a great article the other day, Jalen, about the bullpen for the Royals going into this season and taking a look at the relief pitchers. And it's just we'll see how it all pans out, but it's got to be so much more encouraging for Matt Quatrero to have, you would think, pretty reliable options in high leverage situations and late inning situations, that sort of thing, than what we saw for a portion, at least, of last season when that bullpen was held together by duct tape. It was James MacArthur in a lot of situations when you're like, man, is there any other option? Is there anything else that they can do? But now you've got Estevez, you've got Urcig, Hunter Harvey looks to be healthy, John Schreiber in high leverage situations potentially as well. And that's not all. They've got a lot more depth. So that's got to be a lot more encouraging going into this season for the Royals.
Yeah. When you look at the matchups that the Royals face down the stretch, you have the wild card game against the Baltimore Orioles. You have the ALDS against the Yankees. Those were tough teams that have been very competitive teams offensively. You know, they could mix and match so well with what the Royals were putting out on the field as far as the bullpen. And you were relying on Angel Zerpa and Sam Long, and they pitched well. Daniel Lynch IV, they pitched well in those spots. Chris Bubich. But now you have more established bullpen relievers that you can turn to counteract that. And you have more firepower. And I think that's what the Royals kind of missed last year. Like, it was underestimated the ability of Hunter Harvey. He can throw 99 miles per hour. He has a flamethrower as well. The Royals didn't have that. We only had Lucas that could really do that at the back end of that bullpen. Now you have him, you have Estevez, you have more, you know, velocity that you need to get those guys out in the key moments. And I think that's what's going to be the difference with this Royals team. Is that they can go 6-7 innings, you turn it over to that bullpen, and you feel pretty good about winning a game that day.
How many games are they going to win? Vegas has them at 82. Jalen, we talked about this earlier this week. Why are the Royals being so undervalued nationally? They're only the fourth out of five odds-on favorite to win the division. They're only projected by the odds to win 82 games. That people are projecting not only a step back, but a major step back for them. Yet you see Bobby Witt Jr. as an MVP candidate. I don't get it. The only thing I can think of is a baked in massive starting pitching regression from what they had a year ago. Because the lineup should be better. Vinny Pasquantino's healthy. He should be better. MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfroe aren't going to be off to the slow start, regardless of what else they get. And, of course, then the India trade. So the only thing I can figure is massive starting pitcher regression. Do you read it that way, or do you have a better, you know, gauge of why this might be?
I think that is a big part of it. Because the Royals were really healthy starting pitching-wise last year. Really healthy. I mean, they all made about 25 starts, give or take, you know, everyone that the main guys, right? And I don't understand the whole point of them taking a giant step back. The offense couldn't hit last year and they still won 86 games. I mean, you look at the Royals lineup last year, once you got past Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi, you could easily go through the rest of that lineup. So to say that they can't win 86 games when they approved the lineup with getting Jonathan India, and you, like you said, MJ Melendez, Hunter Renfroe potentially getting off to better starts and are healthier and made adjustments. I just don't see how 82 wins is going to be where they're going to end up at, especially with an improved bullpen like we just talked about. I personally said 90 games. That's where I was at. And I know that could be on the high side of things, but if you won 86 last year with relatively the same team and you get better in key areas, I just can't see a step back. This team is moving forward, not moving backwards.
I think the only thing that I am concerned about going into this season for the Royals is what happens in their lineup after about the fifth spot in the lineup, you know, that bottom of the lineup. And I know that, you know, you've talked a little bit about, like, can Hunter Renfro, can MJ Melendez, can, you know, some of these other guys be able to recapture maybe some of what the expectations at least have been for them offensively. I guess my only worry, and hopefully it doesn't come to fruition, but my only worry is that once you get to the second half of the lineup, you just kind of fall off a cliff. And, you know, so what do you think it's going to take for some of these guys in the bottom of the lineup, you know, to be able to put together good offensive seasons?
Yeah, I think for Hunter Renfro, it's just getting back to the same player that he was before he came to Kansas City. Hunter Renfro, for years, you could pencil him in for 20 home runs. Like, set it, forget it, it's in stone. That's what he's going to hit. I think he has to get back to that power element. For MJ Melendez, I thought we got a really good look at his new swing when he had a home run on a pitch that was on the inside part of the plate, and he actually got to it and turned it and sent it over the right field wall. I think that was very key for him, that he could do that. Now, can he do it consistently? That's the question. But if one of those guys, if one of those guys can just have a solid season, I think that helps the bottom half of that lineup. Because you still have Michael Massey that's going to hit .500. And then you have Melendez or Renfro. One of those two, if they're playing solidly, that helps solidify the middle of that order. And then you just need Garcia and Isbell to get on base to flip it over for the top of the lineup. So I feel like they need to have someone really have a breakout season from the bottom of that order. And it doesn't matter who it is. It could be Garcia. It could be Renfro, Melendez, Isbell, just someone. To strike fear in the hearts of the opposing team so they don't feel like they have three or four automatic outs like they did last year.
I put you on the spot here. I didn't give you time to prepare for this, but we can finish with it. Who give me two players, one for, like, who do you think is the most likely to regress from last season, and who do you think is most likely to take the next step this season?
Wow. That's a tough question. I think a person to take the next step, and I think it's going to be MJ. I really do.
I agree.
I think this is the year for him. He knows it has to be the year for him, and I think he will take that next step. As far as taking a step back, and I don't know how far of a step back is going to be, but I would say Michael Massey, only because if he's going to be playing second base and left field, toggling between the two, and then trying to manage his back and trying to work through that if that flares up, that could be a lot on the player going back and forth. And he's never really done it before. So I won't say it's a major step back, but I could see maybe a slight dip in what he did produce last year.
Well, and I think that answer, the fact that you didn't say a pitcher, it should be encouraging for Royals fans. Should be encouraging.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't see Seth Lugo or Cole Reagans taking a step back. I mean,
or Waka,
just the way they pitch and the way they
Lindsen.
Yeah, I just can't see. And they're all former All-Stars. They know how to pitch. So I think they will be okay. I think the pitching is the strongest part of the team, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. And the bullpen's better than it was a year ago. That's why we can't. It's been strange. All right, Jalen. So you've got some great stuff to get. How much longer are you going to be out at spring training?
I'm going to be out here for a couple weeks. I'm going to come back to KC for a bit, then come back out and then get ready to go.
All right. There you go. Jalen Thompson reporting for us from spring training. We'll have him each and every Friday here for the Royal season. Jalen, we appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Jacob and Tommy. See you guys later.
Sounds good. It's going to be a fun season. All right, Tommy, that'll do it for a week of Sports Daily. Real quick, get you caught up on all the special programming here on the network. You've got Shocker Baseball today, 2:45. Saturday, you've got 11:30 K-State Basketball pregame coverage on KFH. Wichita State Baseball moves over to KNSS at 1:45. Butler basketball in the NJCAA tournament is on KFH at 3:45. Then on Sunday, Shocker baseball right here on KFH at 11:15. Shocker basketball at noon over on KEYN. And then Wichita State women's basketball in the AAC tournament, 7:45. That'll be on KFH. It's the postseason. The next time we talk, Tommy, on Monday, we will be digging into postseason brackets, conference tournaments. I cannot wait.
Let's go. Let's get it going. I'm excited.
Thanks for Jalen Thompson stopping by. Go back to the Odyssey app if you missed any of our Royals conversation. For Max, for Tommy, I'm Jake. We'll see you Monday.